morning on WCHL, plans for providing sewer to the Rogers Road neighborhood are stalled again.
Until we start talking about funding, all we're doing is talking.
Durham police conduct a citywide search for the accused North Carolina Central University shooter. And the Carrboro Film Festival kicks off this weekend featuring films from North Carolina and beyond.
This year we have a lot of films that are from other countries.
These stories and much more, plus your Chapel Hill Carrboro traffic and weather together. And in WCHL Championship Sports, the Carolina football team prepares to take on Old Dominion this week and seal a five-game win streak. And we'll talk with Jones Angel, the voice of the Tar Heels, in just a few minutes. And you can hear how the men's soccer team took down South Florida in the NCAA tournament first round. And the women's soccer team swinging back into action, plus high school football back on the field tonight. We'll preview the matchups. And 8:45 this morning, we have a very special interview coming up with Jim Hebner and James Reston talking about the Kennedy assassination. All of that and more this hour.
This is 97.9 FM. And 1360 AM WCHL, Chapel Hill Carrboro's news, talk, and Tar Heel station. WCHL's Morning News with Ron Stutz begins now.
8:05 at WCHL, up to 49 degrees now, warming up a little bit. Mostly cloudy today, high today in the upper 60s. Actually, not a bad day. Cold coming for the weekend. Despite heated debate at last night's Assembly of Governments meeting, I should say, elected officials are still at an impasse when it comes to the Rogers Road remediation plan. WCHL's Elizabeth Friend was at the meeting and has this story.
Leaders from Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Orange County met together last night to discuss how to move forward with a plan to bring sewer service and a community center to the Rogers Road neighborhood, which has lived with the landfill for 40 years. Chapel Hill Town Council member Matt Chakovsky pushed his peers to commit to funding the plan as soon as possible.
Until we start talking about funding, all we're doing is talking. And it's about time we stop talking.
The historic Rogers Road Task Force came up with a plan to provide sewer service to all 86 homes in the neighborhood at a cost of $5.8 million. The plan has widespread support among local leaders, but the towns and county face two major obstacles, namely a pending federal investigation into the county planning department and no clear method for Chapel Hill to contribute its share of the money. The EPA announced this summer it was investigating claims filed by the Rogers Eubanks Neighborhood Association, or RENA, that the county discriminated against the largely African-American neighborhood by failing to apply for federal grant money to fund sewer service. At the advice of the county attorney, commissioners have held off on endorsing the Rogers Road remediation plan until the investigation is complete. Commissioner Mark Dorison said that's a mistake.
We're at the point where we should move forward. And I think, and I've said this before and I'll say it again, I think it is a disastrous idea to sit back and wait until the EPA makes a decision.
Carrboro Alderman Damon Siles agreed, suggesting approval of the remediation plan could bring the investigation to an end. He said the solution may lie in recent correspondence between the county attorney and the attorney representing RENA.
It's right here before us. The county attorney says a commitment can be made if RENA agrees to withdraw the complaint, and we now have a letter from RENA saying that they will withdraw the complaint.
If we adopt the package.
We've got the solution right here in front of us, folks.
But the question of how to approach the EPA investigation got sidetracked by finger-pointing between town officials about who pays what when. Chapel Hill Town Council member Jim Ward and Carrboro Mayor Mark Chilton.
To me, it seems like you're asking Orange County and Chapel Hill to pay for the infrastructure that you're obligated to provide your residents.
I'm not obligated to provide that. Okay. That issue was litigated in Orange County Superior Court. That's been decided.
I know it's not Chapel Hill's responsibility.
I know 43% of it is Chapel Hill's responsibility. 14% of it is our responsibility.
The task force approved a cost-sharing plan based on the 1972 landfill agreement. Under that plan, Carrboro pays 14%. Chapel Hill and Orange County each contribute 43%. But to do that, Chapel Hill has to find a way to spend town money outside town boundaries. One solution is to absorb the neighborhood into the town's extraterritorial jurisdiction, a process that's already underway. Another option might be to create a sewer district that includes Rogers Road and extends into Chapel Hill. While Chapel Hill is struggling to figure out how to contribute money, Carrboro has designated $900,000 to cover its portion of the plan. Mayor Chilton lambasted Chapel Hill Mayor Mark Kleinschmidt over the council's failure to commit to funding.
We agreed on a set of ground rules about how we were going to allocate these costs. We've stepped up to the plate. We're the people who've put a large chunk of money on the table, and all I get is this bullshit about how you can't put any money in, and I'm not putting in enough, and I'm sick of it.
I don't think that anyone in the town of Chapel Hill says we will not put any money in.
Yeah, I hear a lot about why you can't.
No, you're hearing discussion around where the money comes from.
Chapel Hill Town Council member Lee Storrow urged the group to put their differences aside and accept the task force's recommendation as the best solution.
All of our governments have been at fault and have done things that we're unhappy about regarding this neighborhood. And there is no perfect magic bullet funding formula that's going to make everybody happy. Maybe the county's number should be slightly higher. There are concerns about Carrboro. There are concerns about things that Chapel Hill has done. But I think this funding formula best gets to the root concerns that we all have about the impact we have made on this neighborhood by dumping our trash for 40 years.
Town and county managers asked to be granted authority to start planning for the implementation of the remediation plan if and when the towns and county commit funding. In response, the boards and council asked for managers to return with a report next spring evaluating all the options. Elizabeth Friend, 97.9 FM, WCHL.
If you missed any of that story, you can read the account on our website at chapelboro.com, along with all our other stories. Durham police conducted a citywide search for a 21-year-old man on Thursday afternoon who was accused of firing shots on the campus of North Carolina Central University. Crandall Ingram, a former North Carolina Central student, was identified by police as the man who reportedly fired three or four shots on campus around 2:40 in the afternoon near Concord and Lawson Streets, according to WRAL. Ingram fled in a cream-colored four-door Audi and was last seen headed southeast of campus, according to police. North Carolina Central Police detained the man that Ingram is accused of trying to shoot and brought him in for questioning. The man was not injured. The shooting forced the university to lock down the campus for about 35 minutes. Police gave the all clear shortly after 3 p.m. As of this morning, Ingram had not been apprehended. The North Carolina Award recipient for science, Myron Cohen, says he spent the last 33 years trying to reduce new cases of HIV.
I've been doing this since the very beginning. I came to Chapel Hill in 1980. And in the first cases of HIV in Chapel Hill were in 1981, and we had a fairly large epidemic of HIV in North Carolina that the healthcare providers at the university had helped to manage.
Cohen is UNC's Associate Vice Chancellor for Global Health and Director of the Center for Infectious Diseases. The North Carolina Award is the state's highest civilian honor and was given to five other people, along with Myron Cohen. This came one day after Dean Smith was given the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which is the highest national civilian honor. Cohen is an infectious disease specialist and says he works with a large group of people across the country.
Working to understand the transmission of HIV, the virus HIV, and most importantly, in developing strategies to prevent the transmission of HIV.
Cohen says the study of HIV/AIDS has come a long way and is more than three decades of work on the disease.
There's no organism better studied than HIV, and there's incredible discoveries along the way that have taken this once universally fatal infection, and nowadays this infection is detected early and people receive the proper treatment, they live a normal and healthy lifespan. So it's a quite remarkable journey over 33 years.
Myron Cohen was presented the North Carolina Award by Governor Pat McCrory yesterday in Durham. The North Carolina Department of Cultural Resources administers those awards. Cohen received the award in the Science Division. He was joined this year by the other winners, Asheville's John E. Cram in Fine Arts, Davidson College graduate John M. H. Hart, Jr. in Literature, and legislator Philip J. Kirk, Jr., Education Administrator John Harding Lucas, and internationally acclaimed linguist Walt Wolfram in Public Service. For more on Myron Cohen and the North Carolina Award in general, you can view this story on our website at chapelboro.com. Representatives from Silver Spot Cinema announced that the new theater to replace Dillard's at University Mall may create 60 more jobs for local people. Dillard's currently employs 33 people, but will work with those employees to find them jobs at other Dillard's in the area before closing in January, as WCHL has already reported. The new business to take the place of Dillard's eventually will be a 13-screen luxury movie theater, and it's set to open in 2015. With theaters like this one, Silver Spot Cinema representative Liska Campos said that they typically create about 60 jobs, nearly double the number of employees at Dillard's. The ride operator accused in connection with an accident at the North Carolina State Fair has been set free on bond. The News and Observer of Raleigh reports that records show 46-year-old Timothy Dwayne Tuttero left the Wake County Jail earlier this week. It is time now for Traffic and Weather Together. Coming up, we'll tell you all about the Carrboro Film Festival, and we also have Jones Angel, the voice of the Tar Heels, standing by to talk about tomorrow's football game. Time now for Traffic and Weather Together, and traffic brought to you this morning by UNC Athletics. Carolina football game coming up tomorrow. You can win tickets to Saturday's game against Old Dominion by going to WCHL's Facebook page and registering to win. That's all you have to do, but you have until noon to do it. Deadline is 12 noon today. We'll draw the name of the winner this afternoon and let you know. All right? It's very easy. Traffic has been moving along very smoothly this morning. Rachel Nash reporting on traffic all morning long, and no real serious issues. Some of the usual congestion building up out there in school zones and I-40 out near the RTP and some of the usual suspects, but basically nothing really out of the ordinary. If you spot anything we're not reporting, you can call us in the newsroom, 919-967-8363, or you can tweet us at WCHL. All right, time now to take a look at your Chapel Hill Carborough weather, brought to you this morning by your friends at Cruisers Convenience Marketplace. Cruisers, serving the best-tasting fountain drinks in town, made with 100% filtered water, served at 34 degrees, and great chewy ice, too. Guaranteed to taste great. Cruisers, good to go. It's 49 degrees in Chapel Hill. Well, actually, it's just moved up to 50. It's a milestone. 50 degrees this morning, mostly cloudy. High today, about 60 degrees. Tonight, we're looking at cloudy skies with a chance of rain, mainly after midnight. Overnight, low in the low 50s. Chance of rain is 50-50. And then tomorrow we'll look at it a different kind of day. Rain likely, particularly in the morning. 60% chance of rain. Our high tomorrow in the upper 50s. Pretty good day for football. On Saturday night, though, it's going to turn really cold. Much colder, with the lows in the upper 20s. On Sunday, we're looking at much colder temperatures. Sunny skies, but the highs only in the upper 30s. So get ready for a chill this weekend. We're going to look ahead to next week, since it is a holiday week. On Monday, partly sunny with a high of 40. Tuesday, cloudy, rain likely, and a high in the low 40s. Tuesday night, rain likely. Oh, boy. Wednesday, rain likely. And Wednesday night, colder, lows in the middle 20s. Thanksgiving Day, if you're looking ahead that far. Right now, the Long Range Corp forecast calls for mostly sunshine, with a high in the low 40s on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day. Of course, forecasts have a way of changing a lot between now and then.
Our name is WCHL. Our dial position is 97.9 FM. Our website is chapelboro.com, where you can listen from anywhere in the world with instantly live streaming. You can always start your day with Ron Stutz on 97.9 FM. WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station.
At the bottom of the hour on WCHL, we'll tell you all about the Tuesday event, the Carborough Film Festival, coming up on Saturday and Sunday. And let's go ahead and get to WCHL Championship Sports. Jones Angel on the way. Saturday's game day in Chapel Hill will have a lot of people asking, who are these Monarchs? But the Tar Heels playing out on the field know they have to take this game seriously, and they will have their hands full with the Monarchs' excellent quarterback. WCHL's Matt Oakes has more on the story.
The 5-5 Tar Heels will face 8-3 Old Dominion in a fight for bowl eligibility Saturday at noon inside the cozy confines of Keenan Stadium. With a win, Carolina would earn their first five-game winning streak since way back in 2001. But how have these embattled Tar Heels turned things around so quickly? In a season that was deemed lost by most outside observers? Head coach Larry Fedora says a lot of the turnaround comes from players eliminating the mental lapses and realizing their roles on the team.
I would say eliminating mental mistakes and guys doing their job, understanding what their job is and just doing their job, not trying to do any more, not trying to do anything extra. You know, just doing their job.
Sophomore quarterback Marquise Williams has made a seamless transition to the starting position. Coach Fedora credits offensive coordinator Blake Anderson and his teammates for the success.
Oh, I think he's really comfortable back there. You know, and again, I give Blake credit for preparing him throughout the year. And Marquise did a nice job of preparing himself every week, knowing that, you know, he was going to go in the games and play in some situations and packages. And so he's done a really nice job preparing himself. And again, the team, you know, the unit, I mean, it really hadn't mattered to them who's been back there. You know, we hadn't changed anything. So they've done a nice job with that.
ODU quarterback Tyler Heineke is a dynamic playmaker who distributes the ball to perfection to his receivers. Just ask defensive coordinator Vic Koning how he feels about him. Koning says he compares him to a pretty successful NFL signal caller.
I mean, he is good as there is. I mean, he's Drew Brees is good, if not batter. I mean, he's fantastic. We don't see too many bad decisions, bad balls. I mean, he's as good as there is.
Coach Koenig says he sees a lot of similarities between the Monarch attack and the East Carolina offense Carolina failed to stop earlier in the season. Koenig says he's hopeful the guys are able to overcome the scar of that game and get retribution.
Anytime that you get spurned or get hurt, you know, and you're feeling, I mean, it scars you. So you have that scar, and so we have that scar from that game. And I hope our players learn from that and don't want to go back to that. I think, again, you never know. I think our guys are feeling some pressure and intensity that we know there's a great offense coming in here.
This late in the season, Coach Koenig says the wear and tear of the season starts to build up on the guys. He says the key against Old Dominion will be whether the Tar Heels can summon the energy to play at the high speed necessary to take down the Monarch.
So the ACC, the last four games, has been physical pounding. So it'll, you know, if our guys can get it up for another and play at the speed, you know, then that's going to be the key for us. If we can get up and play at that speed, that's going to take for us to win the game.
Will Carolina's late season magic continue? We'll find out Saturday. You can read this story and follow all the latest on Tar Heel football on our website, chapelboro.com. Matt Oakes, 97.9 FM, WCHL.
WCHL's coverage of tomorrow's game will start bright and early at 9 o'clock with Countdown to Kickoff presented by UNC Healthcare. And one of the people you will hear from during Countdown to Kickoff is Jones Angel. Jones joins us this morning, and Jones, Coach Koenig just compared the Old Dominion quarterback to Drew Brees. My goodness. Didn't realize.
Yeah, that's high praise, but I'm not sure it's not. He hadn't quite accomplished as much as Drew Brees, but
no.
His skill set is similar, and he's really good. His name's Taylor Heinicke, and he won, Ron, last year when Old Dominion was still fully at the FCS level of football. He won the Walter Payton Award, which is essentially the Heisman Trophy at that level of football.
Wow.
And his career numbers are crazy. I mean, this is his second full year starting, and he started a little bit. He's a junior now. Mm-hmm. He started some during his freshman year as well. So we'll give him 2.5 years. He's thrown for more than 11,000 yards and accounted for 121 touchdowns between passing and running. I mean,
wow.
Just huge numbers. And, I mean, I could go, he had 730 yards passing in a game last year against New Hampshire. He threw for 44 touchdowns and more than 5,000 yards last season in total. I mean, they're just ridiculous numbers. Now, some of that was put up against FCS competition, obviously. But Old Dominion and this is a transition year for them as they move into the FBS fully next year. So they've played East Carolina this year. They played Pitt this year. They played Idaho this year. They played Maryland this year. And he's still been able to put up impressive numbers. So, this will be a challenge for the Tar Heel defense coming up tomorrow afternoon.
Jones, the one thing that just keeps coming to my mind is certainly Carolina should be heavily favored to win this game, but the Tar Heels cannot lose their focus. They need to concentrate and keep this momentum going to wrap up the regular season on a high like they are right now.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And I think Larry Fedora has really made a point to remind his guys of some mistakes earlier in the year, of taking an opponent lightly or not being fully focused, and most notably, of course, the East Carolina game. And I think that game, the ECU loss, has actually helped the Tar Heels this week because it's made sure that their focus is on what's happening this week, and that just because it says Old Dominion and not Miami or Virginia Tech or whatever on the jersey that they're playing this week doesn't mean that this isn't a quality team. So I think that has helped them keep focus this week as they've looked towards the Monarchs. And Ron, quite honestly, when you just watch them play, you'd have to be silly not to think that they're not good enough to win the game. I agree with you. Carolina should be favored. The Tar Heels have more depth. The Tar Heels are playing at home, you know, all those things. But if you watch Old Dominion play and you don't think that they have a chance to beat you, then you're just not paying attention.
Well, should be a good day in Kenan-Saban tomorrow. The next to last home game of the regular season. Tar Heels can go bowl eligible with a victory tomorrow, and we're certainly going to hope for that. And in a little bit of unfortunate scheduling, Jones, the Carolina men's basketball team will be playing at exactly the same time up in Connecticut. How's that going to work out?
Oh, gracious. Yeah, we knew this weekend was going to be a challenge, but we were hoping it wouldn't be exactly the same time. So Dave Nathan, who normally handles our pregame, halftime, postgame, and of course Dave called Carolina baseball last year as well on CHL, and Dave is headed up to Connecticut. In fact, he and Eric Montross are already up there with the team, and Dave and Eric will have the call of basketball this weekend. I'm staying in Chapel Hill, and we'll have the call of the football game on Saturday. The football game is going to be live on the network on Saturday, pregame network-wise, at 11 o'clock, and then the kick at 12. We will offer basketball live for free on GoHeels.com, the official website of Carolina Athletics. So it will be available for free right there on GoHeels. And then we are offering it to our network stations for a tape delay broadcast for Saturday night with the pregame starting at 6:30, and then the tip, the tape delay tip, coming at 7:30 that evening. So obviously not an ideal situation, Ron, but the best coverage that we can give considering the circumstances with both those games going at the exact same time this weekend.
In other words, hard for Jones to be in two places at one time.
That's right. Don't think I can be in both.
Well, Jones, I'll tell you what, we'll look forward to talking to you tomorrow during Countdown to Kickoff when Carolina gets set to take on the Old Dominion Monarchs in Kenan Stadium.
Sounds good, Ron. Always appreciate it, and looking forward to the game tomorrow.
All righty. It's 824 at WCHL. A lot of other Carolina sports going on this weekend, and let's get to some of that. Women's soccer. The UNC women's soccer team will continue the defense of its 2012 NCAA championship tonight when the Tar Heels play host to Indiana at Fetzer Field. Game time, 6 o'clock. Matchup between the Tar Heels, who are 18-4, and the Hoosiers, who are 15-6-1, is the second of two NCAA second-round games being played in Chapel Hill. And the first match, Southeastern Conference Tournament champion Texas A&M will meet up against Texas Tech, an at-large bid recipient out of the Big 12 Conference, at 3:30 p.m. The survivors of the two Friday games, the one this afternoon and the one tonight, will meet on Sunday at 1 at Fetzer Field in the NCAA third round. Good luck to Coach Hanson Dorrance and the Tar Heels. For more on the matchup and the 2013 NCAA Women's Soccer Tournament, you can view this story on our website, chapelbro.com. Now, men's soccer. Carolina's men's soccer team posted a 1-0 victory over South Florida at Fetzer Field last night to move on to the second round of the NCAA Men's Soccer Tournament. Tar Heels are now 9-5-5 on the season. They now travel out west to play number 12 seed UC Irvine on Sunday afternoon at 5. You can read all about Carolina men's soccer on our website as well. Now, as far as field hockey is concerned, number 3 UNC will face Connecticut this afternoon at 4:45 in an effort to advance to their fourth straight national championship field hockey game. Tar Heels have finished as national runners-up the past 3 seasons and will be hoping to recapture the title they won back in 2009. Tar Heels are 18-5 on the season. The winner of the UNC-UConn battle will face the victor between Duke and Maryland on Sunday. And high school football, big night tonight. The hunt for the high school football state championship rolls on with the second round of the playoffs. Postseason play leaves no room for error. 11-1 Orange High School was looking to stay alive when they face Cleveland. Tune in to the 11-1 Orange Crush Panthers as they attempt to set up a rematch with Southern Durham. That's a team that spoiled their run at an undefeated regular season just a couple of weeks back. Head coach Pat Moser's team will travel to take on a worthy opponent in 9-3 Cleveland. Orange will need its stingy defense to slow down the Rams. Tune in to coverage from Clayton with Paul Connell and Jeff Hamlin tonight at 7 o'clock on 97.9 FM, 1360 AM, WCHL, and also streaming live on our website, chapelbro.com. Don't forget, tonight, 6:30 p.m., WCHL's duo, Matt Oakes and Matt Paul, will have all your pregame coverage. And you can catch up on the entire season of The Grid with Matt and Matt by going to our website. Tonight, they will be talking with a couple of coaches, Orange's Pat Moser and Northwood's Bill Hall. You can read this story and follow all the latest on The Grid and high school football in our area in general on our website at chapelbro.com. We try and cover it all. It's 8:27 at WCHL. Coming up, another look at local news. We'll look at the Carborough Film Festival. You will hear from D.G. Martin in just a few minutes. And also at 8:45 this morning, a special interview with Jim Hebner and James Reston, UNC graduate and novelist, about the Kennedy assassination. That's coming up at 8:45.
1 in 5 Americans will develop skin cancer in their lifetime. Central Dermatology Center treats cancers where it is important to conserve tissue and high-risk areas such as the ears, face, hands, and feet. Mohs micrographic surgery is a highly effective technique and can be covered by most insurances, including Medicare and TRICARE. Dr. Beth Goldstein has been specializing in Mohs surgery since 2000.
2008. If you're concerned about a non-healing spot or a changing mole, make an appointment at Central Dermatology Center. Find out more at centralderm.net.
Hi, this is Betsy Bertram from Townsend Bertram & Company, Carbro's premier adventure outfitters. Join us at the shop on December 17th from 6 to 8 p.m. for our first ever holiday duet. Enjoy refreshments and appetizers while listening to live performances by seasoned local musicians Ella Bertram and Jennifer Curtis. Our staff of friendly and fun experts will be on hand to help you with your holiday shopping needs. It's the perfect evening to check off your list, stuff your stockings, and enjoy some of the best live music in town. See you on December 17th from 6 to 8 p.m.
If you're over 60 and young at heart, you're looking for more than just a place to live out your years. You're looking for the Cedars of Chapel Hill. Our unique community in Metamot offers you all the independence and financial benefits of owning your own home without all the hassles, so you can pursue other goals and also enjoy the peace of mind of having a continuing health care plan in place. Make your next chapter in life your best chapter. Call us to learn more about the Cedars. Life has been good to you. At the Cedars, it gets even better.
Orange County Solid Waste reminds you to safely dispose of syringes. The improper disposal of needles has a major impact on sanitation workers and their families. Each accidental needle stick requires HIV and hepatitis testing. Use hard wall plastic containers with tight lids. Avoid using thin plastic bottles and never throw loose needles in the garbage. For more information, please call Solid Waste Management at 919-968-2788.
Today's offer at OurLocalDeal.com is from Sutton's Drugstore. It's half off. $20 worth of food and drink available now for dealers. Sutton's has fed the town of Chapel Hill since the early 20s, and their notorious burgers, sandwiches, hot dogs, and milkshakes bring customers back for more. Come and be served by the friendly staff and enjoy hot, fresh, and timely food. And leave with a full stomach and wallet. It's half off from Sutton's, and it's available for a limited time. So buy it now at OurLocalDeal.com.
WCHL's Chapel Hill Carbro Weather brought to you by Cruiser's Convenience Marketplace. Serving the best-tasting fountain drinks in town, made with 100% filtered water, served at 34 degrees, guaranteed to taste great. Cruiser's, good to go. It is 51 degrees in Chapel Hill, mostly cloudy today. High today in the upper 60s. Tonight, cloudy with a chance of rain late. Low tonight, low 50s tomorrow. Rain likely, 60% chance of it. High in the upper 50s. Tomorrow night, turning cold. Lows in the upper 20s. Sunday, much colder. Sunny with a high only in the upper 30s on Sunday.
If it's happening in our Chapel Hill Carbro community, you will hear about it on 97.9 FM, WCHL, and you'll find it on our website, chapelboro.com.
Bagpipes a few minutes ago at Arlington National Cemetery, and coming up shortly, taps will be sounded at President Kennedy's gravesite. It's 50 years since we heard CBS's Walter Cronkite say,
"From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time."
As a Fort Worth Telegram newspaper reporter, Bob Schieffer picked up the phone. A woman asked for a ride.
I said, "Lady, we're not the taxi service. The president's been shot." She says, "Yes, I think my son is the one they've arrested."
Schieffer gave Lee Harvey Oswald's mother a ride to the Dallas jail. As for JFK's legacy,
his legislative record was not all that much. I think what he did was he inspired young people to take an interest in government.
Today in Tokyo, JFK's daughter Caroline, the new U.S. ambassador to Japan, marked the day in private. CBS News Update, I'm Dave Barrett.
This hour of the morning news is presented by Durham Tech, offering affordable and accessible quality education throughout Orange and Durham counties. Visit durhamtech.edu and click on Continuing Education.
WCHL News, talk and Tar Heels at 97.9 FM, WCHL.
51 degrees, 832 at WCHL. It is November 22nd, 2013. 50 years ago today, President John F. Kennedy was shot. Was he shot by accident when Oswald was actually aiming at John Connolly? UNC graduate and novelist James Reston Jr. told WCHL's Jim Hedner that in the process of writing a book about Connolly, he came across evidence that has persuaded him that it was hatred of Connolly that drove Oswald to shoot on November 22, 1963. Now, Reston has now published another book, The Accidental Victim, which appeared in more detail, and he explains it for Jim Hedner in an interview. You can hear that interview this morning at 8:45, WCHL, a very special presentation to mark this dark day in American history. That's coming up at 8:45. Between now and then, you will hear from D.G. Martin. We'll also get today's commentary from Ellie Kinnaird, and we'll tell you all about the Carbro Film Festival, which takes place this weekend. This time around, it has tripled the entries and has expanded to 2 days. So many great films, they couldn't get them all in one day. Event organizers say this weekend will bring the drama in all the right ways. WCHL's Rachel Nash has more.
Jackie Helvey, along with fellow Carborough Arts Committee member Nick Berry, organized the town's first film festival back in 2006. Helvey has watched the event thrive and grow to a two-day event with submissions from across North Carolina and beyond. This year marks the first time that international films and feature-length narrative and documentary movies are screened. The lineup this weekend also features another new addition, two free workshops on visual effects and 3D animation.
And I think it's encouraged local filmmakers to create more. And not only that, we've gotten international fame. This year we have a lot of films that are from other countries.
73 films, a record number for the festival, will be shown in both the Century Center and the Arts Center. 198 films were submitted for consideration. Helvey, along with the selection committee, watched each film in order to narrow down the entries. Helvey says that the recent opening of the Hampton Inn, Carborough's first hotel, was an incentive for the Board of Aldermen to support the expansion of the festival, as it would help accommodate out-of-town attendees.
The Board of Aldermen really understands that it's events like this that bring people to Carborough, that expose people to Carborough.
Documentary filmmaker and UNC graduate Jonathan Michaels first submitted work to the festival as a student.
It's meant a lot coming back to the festival as more of a seasoned documentary filmmaker. It's just a validation of the hard work that's been put into the project.
Michael's piece this year is about this past summer's Moral Monday movement, a series of weekly protests in Raleigh against the North Carolina General Assembly. His film is called It's Monday and the South is Rising.
You'd also have thousands of people showing up to these rallies from all over North Carolina and even surrounding states. So it does mean a lot to people to see a film made about the event. And it's also something that they can hand to other people and say, this is what it was like to be at Moral Monday during the summer of 2013.
Michaels explains the film is meant to be a snapshot of what it was like to experience the Moral Monday protests. Helvey says it is a, quote, piece of history. In addition to documentaries, the selected films encompass genres ranging from drama, comedy, animation, student films, and experimental pieces. For ticket and schedule information for the Carborough Film Festival, you can read this article on our website, chapelborough.com. Rachel Nash, 97.9 FM, WCHL.
WCHL News Time is 8:36.
Now on WCHL, a page from D.G. Martin's notebook.
Well, Thanksgiving's coming up, and what are you going to do with all those visitors who are going to crowd into your house? How are you going to get them out of the house? All the museums in Chapel Hill are closed on Thanksgiving. Well, our best museum is outdoors and open all the time. It's a museum of art and history, of botany, biology, and geology, of architecture and religion, race relations and politics. Thousands of exhibits, thousands of stories are out there waiting to unfold to those who will search and wait and listen. Museum, of course, is our town. Almost every house, tree, wall, hill, corner, stream has its story and its lessons. And here are just three that you might think to check on with your guest on Thanksgiving Day. The first, of course, is Gimgoo Castle, right at the end of Gimgoo Road. And, you know, people travel to Europe to see castles, but we've got one right around the corner. A lot of people in Chapel Hill have never been to see it. All got started in the 1920s when the Gimgoo Society hired Waldensian stoneworkers from Valdez to come up and build that castle. Your visitors can wonder, would this castle withstand an attack by knights on horseback or by a foe armed with gunpowder and cannons? Imaginations go wild at Gimgoo Castle. Then a second thing not to be missed is a look at the murals of Michael Brown, beginning, remember, with that right near the post office, the giant pencil on the wall between on Henderson Street. You can walk from there all the way to the border of Carborough and never be more than a few steps from one of Brown's murals. And I really enjoy a picture that's on the side of the wall of the former Bank America building. You can see it from the parking lot on Rosemary Street. And it makes you think you're looking down on a real town, a town square. just across Rosemary Street is his giant turtle. And then back on Franklin Street in the alleyway close to the Carolina Coffee Shop, there's this whimsical historical piece of an imaginary parade that shows his sense of humor. It's a happy compliment to his artistic talent. Something we see but never really stop to enjoy. There's another piece of art that I think is real important that nobody looks at anymore. It's called Student Body. It's an outdoor sculpture just a few steps from the old Playmakers Theater where you can park on Thanksgiving and other holidays. When the Student Body set of sculptures first arrived and was placed in front of Davis Library and other in the early 1900s, there was an immediate angry protest based on perceived racial and gender stereotyping of the statues of supposedly typical students. But I like Student Body. I don't know why, because there is a controversy about its artistic worth as well. These are just three of the hundreds of things that you can see in Chapel Hill on Thanksgiving Day. If these don't interest you, think about the gargoyles from London's Big Ben, now on the side of Person Hall, or the wonderful pathways and plants in the Coke Arboretum or the Botanical Garden, or the some of the lively outdoor sculptures all over Chapel Hill, particularly the ones I like on Weaver Street in Carrboro. And there's on and on. Our Chapel Hill Outdoor Museum never runs out of exhibits. So don't despair on Thanksgiving. Take your friends outside. Show them our town museum. This is D.G. Martin.
Thank you, D.G. 840 at WCHL.
Remember the last time you had the flu? Headache, body ache, chills, fever, stuffy nose? Remember how awful you felt? The best way to prevent the flu is by getting a flu vaccine. UNC Family Medicine is here to help protect you and your family from the flu. After all, who wants to feel sick? Call us at 919-966-0210 or visit us at uncfamilymedicine.org. Just another way that UNC Family Medicine is caring for the course of your life.
Here's what a typical service department sounds like on Sundays, but not at Crown Honda of South Point. We're open 11 to 5 on Sundays. No one else does that. No more early morning drop-offs or rushing after work with the kids. We work around your schedule. And you can always count on Crown Honda of South Point for the best deal, like zero down and just $259 a month on a 2013 Honda Accord LX. For service beyond the sale, Crown Honda of South Point, now with service on Sundays.
This is Charles House, owner of University Florist, wishing you and your family the happiest of holidays this year and into the next. Did you know the University Florist has been on Franklin Street in downtown Chapel Hill for over 65 years? That means for decades we have been creating gorgeous Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, and Christmas holiday florals which exceed the expectations of our customers. I like to say we have gifts and flowers for all reasons and all seasons, and that's especially true this holiday season. Give us a call at 929-1119 for this year's holiday inspiration. University Florist, downtown on Franklin Street.
Cater your holiday event anywhere in the Triangle and beyond with award-winning Dickey's Barbecue Pit. We have smoked or Cajun fried turkeys and barbecue honey hams complete with cornbread dressing, baked potato casserole, and green beans with bacon and gravy. Simple or fancy, from box lunches, pickup buffets, through full-service catering, talk to us, your catering experts. With 8 juicy smoked meats and fresh sides, you will have a special event that is tasty and affordable. Dickey's, located in Durham off Mount Moriah Road, also in Cary and downtown Raleigh in the Red Hat Building.
Bette Davis famously said, "Getting old is not for sissies." What she didn't say is that dealing with aging loved ones is no easy task either. HomeWatch Caregivers gives you the support you need for your loved ones. From simple companionship to comprehensive personal care, its trained staff gives you peace of mind. You can relax knowing your family member is well taken care of. HomeWatchCaregivers.com or call 919-960-6038. HomeWatch Caregivers, let our family care for yours.
Morning. It is 842 at WCHL, up to 51 degrees in Chapel Hill, 50 in Carrboro, where it's always a degree cooler.
36 countries, 150 artisan groups, a world of handmade treasures, and one place to discover them all. 10,000 villages, home decor, jewelry, gifts, all one of a kind, fashioned one at a time.
At 10,000 villages, each item tells a story.
When somebody else takes that beautiful item, I want to carry that beauty to them.
They're gifts that give twice, because 10,000 villages is a fair trade retailer providing sustainable income to artisans in developing countries.
Fair trade has been the possibility to have what we have now.
Enriching their lives while bringing exotic elegance into yours. Surprise your senses. Express your style. Experience the new. Step into 10,000 villages.
I feel very beautiful making these products, and I want all our customers to feel beautiful wearing them.
Find holiday gifts and decor with meaning at 10,000 villages in Chapel Hill.
6 seconds on the clock. Taylor spins, pulls up, and hits the jumper. Let's go to the instant replay. Taylor made a move past the guard, and what was that?
Looks like he pulled out his phone and called Geico for a free rate quote.
In the middle of the game?
He saved hundreds of dollars on his car insurance and nails the shot.
You can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him.
Students, alumni, and faculty of any ACC school could qualify for a special discount on Geico auto insurance. Call or go to geico.com/the ACC.
A quick look at your Chapel Hill Cabrera weather brought to you this morning by your friends at Five Guys Burgers and Fries. Nothing beats Five Guys hand-formed patties of fresh ground beef piled high with any or all of 15 free toppings, plus their fresh-cut Idaho fries. Five Guys, Metamont Village in Chapel Hill. 51 degrees in Chapel Hill, mostly cloudy today. High today in the upper 60s. Tonight, cloudy with the chance of rain. Low tonight in the low 50s. Tomorrow, rain likely, 60% chance, high in the upper 50s. Saturday night, cold, mostly clear with a low in the upper 20s. Then on Sunday, much colder, sunny with a high of only about 38 degrees. And today is November 22nd, 2013. On this date in 1963, President John F. Kennedy was assassinated. Was John Kennedy shot by accident when Oswald was actually aiming at John Connolly? The graduate and novelist James Rustin Jr. told WCHL's Jim Hebner that in the process of writing a book about Connolly, he came across evidence that has persuaded him that it was hatred of Connolly that drove Oswald to shoot on November 22nd, 50 years ago today. Rustin has now published another book, The Accidental Victim, which appeared in more detail, and he explains it here for Jim Hebner in an interview that appeared earlier this year on WCHL.
Jim Rustin, I want to ask you about a book that has created a bit of a stir in which you're going to posit that Lee Harvey Oswald did not intend to kill President Kennedy, but was in fact trying to kill John Connolly. So how did you get into that story, and how did you come to that remarkable conclusion?
I was between books in 1985, and the publisher of Harper & Row approached me and asked me to do a biography of Jesse Helms, knowing of my North Carolina roots. I don't know whether he knew of my left-leaning proclivities in asking me to do this or not, but at any rate, I took a big gulp and said I would do this. I found out 2 or 3 months later that there was a book on Jesse Helms that was about to be published, and so I called him up and said, you know, we're going to have to find something different to do. Very shortly thereafter, John Connolly, great confidant of LBJ for all those many years, present in the car as governor of Texas in Dallas on November 22nd and wounded. Later goes on the cabinet of Richard Nixon and at the end runs for president in 1980 and doesn't go anywhere and goes back to Texas to become Texas rich. Then falls flat on his face and goes bankrupt and owes $50 million. Well, that happened when we were looking for a replacement subject, so I called up the publisher and said, I'll do that. And so I threw myself into the Connolly story. As you move through the narrative of that life, you center on the Dallas assassination. And this is one of the glories of being a writer, that when you take a book on, there are surprises that come your way. And I was very, very surprised and riveted to learn that there was really a relationship between Lee Harvey Oswald and John Connolly that went back 2 years before the Dallas assassination. And the relationship had to do with a military discharge for Lee Harvey Oswald. where he had been in the Marine Corps and had been discharged honorably. And it was the only thing that this wretched little man had ever done of value in his life, was to get through the Marine Corps and be honorably discharged. Well, he was this scatterbrained character with a ninth grade education, and he grandly decided afterwards that after his military career that he was going to defect and go to the Soviet Union.
Oswald
did. So he went to the Soviet Union and spent a year and a half, and after a year and a half decided really wasn't cracked up to be what he thought it was going to be and wanted to go home. And at that point he learned that his discharge, this valued thing in his resume, had been summarily changed from honorable to dishonorable. And the Navy had done this, Navy being over the Marine Corps, as a result of his attempt to defect to the Soviet Union. So he writes a letter to the Secretary of the Navy, who he hears is from Texas, and indeed from Fort Worth, where he is from, this plaintive letter about this outrage of this summary change in his discharge. And he was right. There was no proper hearing for this. So he had a case. So he writes to John Connally, who is then the Secretary of the Navy. And just about a year later, when really he's about to get on the train to go back to America from the Soviet Union, he gets a response from John Connally, which is a classic bureaucratic brush-off. I'm no longer Secretary of the Navy. Here's my successor's name. Sincerely yours. And it comes to Oswald in Russia in an envelope that says, John Connally for governor of Texas, a promotional thing, and there's a headshot of Connally in the midst of a Texas star. Well, he knows, Oswald does, that when he comes back to the United States, he's going to have a terrible time finding work if his discharge is changed. And indeed, that happens. Because in any interview, the only thing he's got to say for himself is that he was discharged from the Marine Corps. And of course, they ask immediately, were you honorably discharged? And it causes him great anxiety. It's my theory that he became kind of obsessed with Connally as the one who had refused to address his discharge. And he takes a great aversion to Connally. I think it moves into a kind of rage. And what I was able to discover in researching that Connally book was that in the background testimony for the Warren Commission that was supposed to look into the Kennedy assassination, Oswald's wife, Marina, testified three times that Oswald was going after Connally and not after Kennedy. The members of the White Russian diaspora in Dallas, who knew Oswald, spoke of his ire and hate of Connally. And Marina Oswald, when she was re-interviewed in 1977, stood by the testimony that he was going after Connally. You put that in parallel to Oswald's attitude towards Kennedy, which was one of total admiration. So there is no emotional reason for Lee Harvey Oswald to have picked up that rifle and gone after Kennedy. So I think this insight is what I believe it is in relation to Oswald's motive comes partly because I was a novelist, or am a novelist, and, you know, I'm interested in what drives people. What, you know, you can object to somebody's politics, but what makes you go beyond an objection and be so hateful that you want to pick up a rifle and kill somebody? That's a big, big step, and it's emotional. It's not intellectual. So the last thing to say is that the Warren Commission just simply said that his motive was that he was a Marxist and he had a few grandiose ideas. But there are lots of Marxists out there that don't pick up weapons and go out to kill people.
The notion that somehow the President of the United States could be killed by accident, there's something asymmetric about that, that it doesn't seem to match up with the kind of explanation that we would like. And this then leads us to whether you believe this will be received as one more conspiracy theory, or do you believe that your case is made sufficiently that this is likely to change the dialogue? Because to my knowledge, this has not been posited before, has it?
Yes, it has. I mean, I suggested it in my Connolly biography and on the 25th anniversary. And here we're coming up to the 50th, where there's going to be wall-to-wall focus on JFK. I think you're absolutely right. This is going to be very hard to get accepted, because anybody in America wants to believe if so horrendous a crime as the assassination of a president comes along, there has to be a motive of the killer as grand as the crime. So we want to believe that he was a Marxist, he had grandiose notions, or we want to believe that there was some conspiracy where a criminal organization or a foreign country hired this guy as an assassin to do it. I think that's ridiculous.
Well, he had a rifle with a scope on it. Was he that bad a shot?
He had a rifle that was a mail order rifle with the lowest possible ammunition quality. And The Day of the Jackal is a movie about an attempted assassination on Charles de Gaulle. That the Jackal in that movie is a professional killer who is hired by, you know, a right-wing organization in France. The Cuban government, if they set out to kill the president of the United States, is not going to hire a wretched little man with a ninth grade education who is totally scattered in his mind. Nor, if a mafia group wants to kill the president, are they going to hire some little creep like Lee Harvey Oswald. They're going to get a real professional with the best possible rifle and the best possible ammunition and the best possible way to kill him. So this book of mine is totally anti-conspiracy, even though the History Channel has had a poll that says 85% of the American people now believe that there was a conspiracy. And there's no evidence of it whatsoever.
How close was Connolly to Kennedy in the car, logistically, geometrically? What's the probability that he could miss at that close a range?
Once you get into the third floor of the book depository, he has two possibilities. One is to fire the shot as the car is coming towards the book depository, and the other is to fire when it's gone past the book depository. There is actually a memo in the Warren Commission documents about whether Connolly was truly the target, and they discard this theory by saying if that was the case, maybe Oswald really would have shot at him when they were coming toward him. Well, I would say, as a logical matter, if you were going to try to kill somebody, that you want to have the best opportunity to escape that you can. So you've got a better opportunity to escape if you shoot when they're going away and then get away rather than when they're coming towards you. That's point number one. Point number two is that as that car comes past the book depository, there's a tree there. And so the car has to go beyond the tree for Oswald to have a shot. And by that time, he's looking at a limousine where John Connolly is sitting immediately in front of the president. And so, I mean, if truly he wanted to distinguish between shooting Connolly or shooting the president, it'd be a very, very difficult thing to do. So I've seen those perspectives, and of course that's been reconstructed many times in various forums. So I don't think it's really that important that the fact that he killed the president and didn't kill Connolly means that he was out to get the president instead of Connolly. As a point, in a point of fact, he almost did kill Connolly with the first shot that went through Kennedy's neck and went into Connolly's back, missed his vital organs by an inch, went through his body and hit his leg through his wrist and ended up hitting his leg. So it was an incredible shot, the first one, but that didn't kill the president. And if that had been the only shot passing through the neck, the president would have survived.
And you believe that the president's corset kept him erect and put him between the shooter and Connolly, who by then was slumped over.
Right. This is something that President Kennedy had attempted to keep from the public all his public life, about his terrible back problems and his medical problems generally. And he wanted to present himself as an erect military, handsome figure, but he had this terrible back problem, several terrible operations on it. And the remedy for that in 1963 was to wear this corset, which had shoelaces and it had straps on it. And the Kennedy's valet would strap this the president into this corset before he would go into the public. On that day, in addition to that corset, he had an ace bandage, which was wrapped around the corset itself, so it further almost mummified him, where his lower torso could not move. So if you look at the Zapruder film, after that first shot through the neck, there are 5 full seconds in which the president remains erect in that car, while the rest of them, Connolly in particular, are writhing in pain and figures in motion. And so with the second shot that blows his head off, he's just the sole stationary target there for the second shot.
And the book is called?
The Accidental Victim.
James Reston, Jr., thanks for being
Jim Hevner. James Reston, UNC graduate and novelist who's written a nonfiction book of the Kennedy assassination about that incident. Today, of course, November 22nd, 2013, the 50th anniversary of what happened on that fateful day in 1963 that changed the world. It's 8:59. At WCHL.
This hour of the morning news is presented by Durham Tech Community College. Want a head start on college or career skills? A great opportunity awaits you at Durham Tech. Online at durhamtech.edu.
And if you're wondering about your Chapel Hill Carborough weather, it's going to be cold this weekend. Today, mostly cloudy with a high in the upper 60s, but tomorrow, rain likely, high in the upper 50s. Saturday night, cold, clear, lows in the upper 20s. And then on Sunday, much colder with a high only in the upper 30s.
You're listening to 97.9 FM. And 1360 AM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heels station.
It's 9 o'clock.
And now, CBS News, presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development, where commerce plus social equity plus environmental stewardship equals our community.